Welcome to Torah Smash, the podcast for nerdy Jews, where our lives of Jewish learning collide with our love of nerd culture. In each episode, we discuss what we lovingly call a Torah Smash, which we have defined as a beautiful collision of one thing from the world of Judaism with another from nerd culture. I am Barak Malkin, and joining me today are...
Ethan Lane Miller.
RDY.
And Isaac Bringegard-Bialik.
Yeah. That's right. Coming back for a second time, our guest for today's episode is Isaac Bringegard-Bialik. Isaac cuts up comic books and reassembles them into paper cuts that explore the stories of the Jewish people, connecting popular culture with sacred texts. He has shown his paper cuts in galleries across the globe and has commissions in museums, synagogues, hospitals, and private collections, including those of William Shatner and Robert Kirkman. Isaac regularly speaks and writes about the intersection of art and Judaism, maintains an annual summer residency at URJ Camp Newman, and is on the executive board of Jewish Artists Initiative, committed to fostering visual art by Jewish artists and promoting dialogue about Jewish identity and related issues. His work is frequently featured in print and online, including recent articles in The Forward, The LA Weekly, Cleveland Jewish News, and KCET's Artbound series. And with his wife, a rabbi in the Reform movement, he co-founded Paper Midrash, bringing together contemporary art, pop culture, and scholarship in custom workshops and residencies they lead around the world. Welcome back as our first returning guest to the show, Isaac.
Woo! I am so happy to be here with you guys.
Yeah, very excited to have you back.
It also makes you eligible for our second annual Dungeons & Dragons game with former hosts. So you get a second shot.
I am in. Now, how many appearances does it take to get the velvet jacket?
Five.
It's like SNL. Five.
Like SNL, yeah.
We are just like SNL. Absolutely. Before we jump into today's very exciting conversation, I do want to let our listeners know something very exciting that's coming up. Mark your calendars and get ready, because coming this January to Chicago is Torah Smash Live. Woo! Ethan, RDY, and myself are going to be in the same zip code together for the first time ever, and we will be recording a live episode, and we're inviting all of you to join. Saturday, January 13th, 2024 at KAM Isaiah Israel. For more details on this event, go to torahsmash.com/live. Come to nerd out with us and be a part of Jewish history.
The big venue, right, RDY?
It's a big venue, but we're going to be in a small space because the big space is under construction, but it's still going to be awesome.
It'll be the biggest venue we've ever played.
The biggest.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for it.
When is Torah Smash on ice?
That's our holiday special. That'll probably be... next year.
Yeah. The Torah Smash Holiday Special.
All right. So today's show will be a little different than normal. As there is no smash, there will be guessing. And we have all come fully prepared on this topic. Today, we're going to hold Torah Smash's first ever top five countdown. And in this episode, we're going to explore our favorite Jewish characters in pop culture. I asked Isaac to join us for this episode because of his in-depth look at the character of Moon Knight last year, as well as the work he does on a day-to-day basis. And I'm really excited to see who he chooses, as well as the rest of us. So you may ask, how will a Torah Smash top five countdown work? I'm glad you asked. We will start with everyone's number five pick, sharing just the character and property first, then going back around to give a brief explanation to why that character was selected. After number five, we'll do the same thing with everybody's number four pick and continue until we reach everyone's number one pick. If someone states a character, but another of the hosts has them higher on their list, then in that moment, those two co-hosts will decide who keeps that mention for their list and who instead brings in someone from their alternates list. Also, we gave each other parameters that the character has to be from a secular property and not from a movie, series, or medium that is explicitly Jewish, such as something about the Holocaust or Jewish ghettos, so you won't hear on today's list some top favorites like Tevye from Fiddler on the Roof or Guido from Life is Beautiful. Do we all understand and agree?
I understand the rules and agree to them.
Agreed.
So say we all.
So say we all.
Excellent. So let's get to it, and we'll start with number five. So we'll go around, we'll each say our number fives, and we'll chop back for why they are that person. So I'll go first. My number five pick is Cindy Hayes, who later changes her name to Tova in Orange is the New Black.
I am, for my number 5 draft pick, I am picking Amnon from Firefly.
Ooh. This is, I'm already loving this. My number 5 pick is Stanley Uris from It.
My number 5 pick is Billy Kaplan Altman, known as Wiccan, from the Young Avengers in the Marvel Comics universe.
Awesome. All right, so now we'll dive into them a little bit deeper. All right, so for those that didn't see Orange is the New Black, Cindy Hayes is unhappy with the meals in the kitchen in the prison. And so she realizes that the kosher meals are much better. So she decides to call herself Jewish. And later, more and more people start to ask for kosher meals. It becomes prohibited unless you were confirmed to be Jewish by the rent rabbi Elijah. Cindy was deemed not Jewish by Elijah, much to Cindy's annoyance, who was told that she was following Jewish culture and not the religion. So she meets with the rent rabbi Elijah. He refuses twice until she gives a moving speech, and then he accepts happily. So Cindy converts to Judaism with the help of 2 other Jewish inmates and adopts the name Tova. And at the end of the season, Cindy is immersed in a lake behind the prison, which sort of completes her conversion. And so this like shift from cultural to religious Jew, and as a convert, I really loved their exploration of the character. And so that was why she was my number 5.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I love the inclusion of the mikveh, you know, as part of that conversion, which obviously is a part of the process. But to find that space in the world of the prison, to be able to bring that in, to have writers who are right knowledgeable enough to make that part of it, I love that.
It was part of a prison break. And everybody else is escaping, and they sort of pause and do this dip to complete her conversion. Yeah. it was beautifully written.
I remember that. I love that episode. Yeah. Not quite as good as the Mandalorian one.
Agreed. Agreed. Yeah.
So, Amnon from Firefly. Most people don't know who this is. In one episode of Firefly, and there are not very many episodes of Firefly, the crew visits a space post office, and the postman wears a kippah, has tzitzit, and that's it. He's just a Jew in space. Now, if you want to dive deeper, there's an article by Yair Rosenberg in The Atlantic that dives into this. And in it, he writes, he appears in only one episode, and his Jewishness is so fascinating because it goes entirely unremarked. The show's characters never discuss it, and it plays no role in the plot. It's just there.
Right. I think that's the way I like it.
Yeah, he's just a Jew in space.
I have a couple on my list that are sort of just background. Like, it's part of their character, and that's it.
I think normalizing minorities and just by just having them there is a very helpful way to, you know, they're just a part of the universe, and that's it. That's one of the things that I loved about the Earth 2 Green Lantern was that, you know, he's gay, and there we go. Now let's save the universe. Yeah.
So please go ahead and search From the Incredible True Story Behind TV's Strangest Space Jew to get the full saga of how this came to be.
Not a sponsor.
That's awesome.
Awesome. So I chose Stanley Uris specifically to be number 5 because he was, in addition to being excited that there was a Jewish character in a book I was reading when I was far too young, there was disappointment that he killed himself. So Stanley Uris was being bullied by Bowers because he was Jewish. And yet he's a kid who didn't even know how to keep kosher. So things that come up in the novel show that Stanley's Judaism is really the only thing that Bowers has to beat him up about. And it's not like he's not proud of it. Yeah, his parents are Jewish. He doesn't know anything about it. You know, he did bar mitzvah and, you know, that's it. And really, it's Eddie who has a little bit more of a Jewish feel to him, but it's not said that Eddie is Jewish, and it is specifically stated for Stanley Uris. Stanley also has this like feeling that the monster, that it is female and pregnant, and that's part of why he doesn't want to go back. And again, this is from the book more than the movie. So it's always been that like, cool that we got a shout out, but a little disappointing of how he turned out.
Hence number 5.
Hence number five.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You know, Stephen King will occasionally throw in those little bits of Jewish stuff. I was just reading another book of his, and I was trying to decide if the character was Jewish because there were a few phrases that kept coming in. And I don't think he was. And it almost seemed out of place, actually, in this small town. But I like when those things are just part of the fabric of the world. You know, whether we're talking about Amnon or Stanley, you know, where, I mean, Judaism is around us. And so for it to be absent from a fictional work sometimes seems intentional. Like, oh, there's no Jews here. So I like when they're there, even if it's not always, you know, the way that I'd want them to be seen.
Yeah.
So my number five, as I said, Billy Kaplan Altman. He's hyphenated now that he got married. So Billy has this very odd origin story in the comics because he shows up with a bunch of other wannabe Avengers who all have these names and costumes that seem to derive from the mainstream Avengers. Billy is known as Wiccan, and he's got this whole Scarlet Witch influence thing. And as it turns out, he is the magically created offspring of the Scarlet Witch, who may or may not be Jewish, depending upon your feelings about Magneto. But the actual Billy Kaplan, who exists in Marvel Comics, really was raised by these Reformed Jews on the Upper West Side in New York. So his parents, not the Scarlet Witch, his parents are canonically Reformed Jews. He is a Reformed Jew. And you have plenty of Jews in the comics. But the reason that I like him so much is, yeah, that capital R Reform, representation for my ideology. Not to mention that he is also a queer character who has gone through this great path of finding love with the Hulkling, and they had this lovely intergalactic, interfaith space superhero wedding with a rabbi and a chuppah, and they broke the glass and everyone yells mazel tov. This lovely, touching moment. But his Judaism, again, is this sort of thing that's, it's background for the character. It's not like they make a big deal out of it and he has to go save the menorah in the December issue. he's Jewish and he's queer and he's a superhero.
Love it. Great. This is like so exciting. I can't wait to see everybody's other characters. So let's move on to number four.
Should we go see number four?
Yeah, let's go see number four. So I'm going to start some trouble with this one. I already know it. My number four pick is Lawrence Cohen, better known as Chunk from The Goonies.
You're in so much trouble.
Good pick. I'm happy to, if that is higher up on your list, I have an alternate I'm happy to throw in.
Yeah, give us we did talk in the very first episode of Taurus Mash.
I know. It's because of you that I know he's Jewish, so I will leave him for another pick for you. And I will bring in my first...
Are we keeping this in the podcast? Yeah. This little, like... Yeah. Because I also don't want to like bully you out of your choice.
No, you're not bullying me. No, I said I knew I was starting trouble. Okay. So happy to bring in my first alternate, who is Julius Levinson. He is Jeff Goldblum's father in Independence Day.
Nice. Oh, good pick.
So that is going to be my number four. Ethan?
I am picking Dina from The Last of Us Part 2.
My number four, with apologies, because I think I might be starting the same kind of trouble. My number four is Magneto.
Yeah, 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 you take him.
He's not even on my list. He's not even on my list of alternates.
Wow. Is it like too obvious?
I have a different character that Chris Claremont and John Byrne worked on. And I know that Magneto predates them, but you'll get into that. But for those sorts of reasons, I felt there was too much overlap and I just stayed away from him.
Very nice.
Okay.
Magneto was my number two.
Do you want me to put in an alternate?
Nope. Magneto's yours.
Okay.
Yeah, and I want to point out that the last time I was here, we talked a lot about Moon Knight. And that's why Moon Knight is not on my main list of five, because we've been to that well, if you'll allow me the biblical reference. My number four is Kate Kane, Batwoman from DC Comics, and specifically the version that we've seen of her in this millennium as a queer Jewish superhero.
Ah, I love it. She is one of my alternates.
Awesome. She's one of my alternates as well. But are you talking also TV show or just comic books?
I am strictly working with the comic book version of her. I know that there's been some back and forth with the TV casting. I don't know that any of that necessarily negates my interest in her as a character. I can't speak to it, actually. So if someone wants to add on when we get there, I would love to hear more about Kate Kane and, you know, the various other Batwoman interpretations.
Very fun. Okay, so Julius Levinson. He, for most of the movie, struggled with his Jewish faith during Independence Day. And there's a turning point where he receives like a prayer book from Jeff Goldblum's character, quote, just in case, right? Just to have it just in case. And then in the climactic scenes, he gathers everybody together in a circle to pray after a whole movie of struggling with his Judaism. And I think the best line that he has, I think one of the best lines from the movie comes from him at this point, where somebody comes in and says to him, well, I'm not Jewish, and sort of saying, I can't pray in the circle, I'm not Jewish. And he replies, nobody's perfect. Yeah. It's a great line. And I don't think it was just to quip to the person. I also think it's a quip to himself, knowing that even himself struggling throughout the film is also not perfect. That is to say, I don't think he was saying that if you're Jewish, you're perfect, but rather that everyone has things that they need to work on, even the Jewish people. And so that is why I put him on my list.
Yeah. So I thought that nobody's perfect was a reference to Some Like It Hot, where at the end of the movie, it's revealed that Jack Lemmon is not a woman. And the guy who's been in love with the woman that he was dressed as, Jack Lemmon says, look, I'm not, I'm a man. And the guy looks at him and says, nobody's perfect.
It could be. Wow. Let's say it's both.
It could be both.
I don't know how much extemporaneous riffing we're supposed to do here, but I've got to say, there's something about Judd Hirsch in Independence Day that I get similar vibes from Henry Winkler in Black Adam. I don't know if anyone has got him on their list. So Black Adam, there's a character, we've got the Atom Smasher. And he mentions having gotten his costume from his uncle. In the comics, that's a Jewish character. And in fact, the way that you know in the movie that he's a Jewish character is when he calls his uncle on the phone, he's played by Henry Winkler. That is the dog whistle that you've got a Jewish character, is whether Judd Hirsch or Henry Winkler are an antecedent. I think that's the way it goes.
Oh, very fun. Ethan, your Last of Us pick.
All right. I'm not the last pick. But my pick is The Last of Us.
Yes.
So Dina from The Last of Us Part 2 is the love interest of Ellie, one of the main characters of the video game. And being Jewish is just a key part of the character. When they hide in a synagogue, she talks to Ellie about what it's like in the synagogue, or what it used to be like in synagogue, as what she learned from her family. We learned that her sister took her there and she continued to pray. The good luck charm that she gives Ellie is a chamsa. It's not made to be like, it's this interesting middle ground between like, it's definitely not just like a part of it as Amnon was, but it is a core part of the character of who she is and informs some of her way of conceptualizing and handling living in an apocalypse.
Nice.
So they're like sitting around the synagogue amongst the zombie apocalypse going, oh, that's where I used to sit while I was reading for my bar mitzvah practice. And oh, that's where I got yelled at by the rabbi. Like, is that what they were? What did she point out sitting in? Nobody does that.
So I've got a quote, Barack. I've got a quote. So Ellie says, 5774, are we in the future? And so then Dina responds, no, doofus, that's a Hebrew calendar.
That's a John Stewart joke. John Stewart, at one point several years ago, said something the effect.
I need you to clarify which John Stewart we're talking about.
Oh,
here.
Right. Yeah. Because
the Green Lantern, I'm assuming.
Talk show host John Stewart, when he used to host The Daily Show, during some episode in September, said, I'm just going to say 5774. And he says, because Jews are from the future.
A long time ago in the galaxy far, far away.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's the next episode.
Let there be. Okay, so Eric Lencher, Magneto, Now, again, like Stan Uris, part of the reason he's number four on my list is because he's a little bit like overdone. And yeah, we all know he'd do it. But I just wanted to give him that mention. And also like the occasional anti-hero that he portrays. I feel like if I had survived the Holocaust, I would probably lean towards Brotherhood of Evil Mutants and anti-hero more than I would towards, you know, Charles Xavier's School for the Gifted. And so there's a little bit of empathy in me about that. That anger I can understand. But also in like thinking about these characters, I learned that though Magneto was created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, his backstory was conceived by Chris Claremont, who designed him after Menachem Begin. So
for Jason, what is Begin? Jason,
Menachem Begin was at the time he was the Israeli opposition leader. So he's a politician. He was the sixth prime minister of Israel. So, you know, not always given the best public eye, but Claremont also threw in a little Malcolm X, a little of another real person who I'm not even going to give the respect of naming him because it turns out he's a horrible person. Very, very anti-LGBTQ. And I would say all of the villain that is in Magneto comes from this other person that he's modeled after. So again, like not even going to waste my breath on his name.
I think some of what for me puts him so up on the list is like, he's a villain where it's like, I understand you. I may not agree with you, but like, I think Magneto's very understandable as a villain, as an antagonist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, everyone has that quote about, right, post-Holocaust, whether it's about, oh, there can't be poetry after Auschwitz or whatever, right? There's this sense that you can interpret the Jewish people as having been broken by that event, and that Magneto represents that brokenness. And I don't know, you know, Begin, for a guy who was with the Haganah, and then, like, that wasn't revolutionary enough, and he has the splinter, right, with the Irgun or whatever, like, he was a revolutionary, and he had his warlike, you know, tendencies. But I feel like Magneto goes in this other direction to the point where, and he's a villain, right? That's why. I don't think his response to the Holocaust falls into the spectrum of like Jewish response to tragedy. That's what gets me, is I don't see it turning a Jew evil. I see it turning someone into an atheist. I see it turning them into a more observant Jew. I see it turning them into, you know, a Zionist or, you know, just a person without a state. I have a hard time. Maybe it's because I don't like it morally, even though it probably happens. I have a hard time with the Jew who turns bad.
I would challenge and say I don't think any of us have faced the horrors and terror and trauma level of being in something like the Holocaust. Yeah. We've seen other scenarios of people in trauma experiences in, you know, pop culture mediums that have that downturn of situations of they could choose one or two ways, and sometimes they choose that downward path like Magneto did. So while I agree with you, I would hope that I would not turn that way. I think it's really hard to imagine really experiencing that to say Magneto's not realistic for a Jewish response.
And I'm going to add to that to say that from what I know about you, Isaac, I think you're also kind of bearing your hero bias, I'm going to call it, that you know, you're a very good person. You surround yourself with good people. Your wife is a very good people. Your kids are great people. You study heroes. You focus your life on, you know, the stories of good overcoming evil. And I think that that bias might affect your disbelief that someone would react this way.
I think you may be right. I mean, I believe in the power of redemption. And I don't think every villain needs a redemption story. I don't think we need to understand all of them. But yeah, I think there's something really exciting. When Superman recently revealed his identity to the world, and the Toy Man has this moment in prison where he realizes, oh my God, like I have hated Superman all these years, but he's just been this guy. He's working a job. He has the same troubles that I have. And Toyman has this turnaround and he realizes he can be better than that. Yeah, I like those hero stories. I like when villains become good. I love that Magneto became a teacher, you know, in recent times. But there's, I don't know if it's hero worship. I guess it's that we tend to idolize. Nowadays, there's a lot of idolization of villainy. I think a lot of our problems come to, not that comic books ruined the world, but think about every property that Alan Moore wrote that he takes his name off now. Think about how people revere the Joker and the Killing Joke for the wrong reasons, or how they all wear those Guy Fawkes masks because they don't understand V for Vendetta. Or for that matter, the recent Joker movie, which I think was an incredible film that should not have been made. We see these people and we think, oh yeah, like they're justifiable or okay. Yeah, I think that's what it is. I believe too much in the reality of Magneto to be comfortable with his existence. If he was just a fictional character, I could care less. There's plenty of villains around. But comics are so alive to me that, yeah, I feel like I know Magneto, that I could run into him at some point and I want him to be a better man. That's my problem with it. Not that he's not a good Jewish character, but that he's not a good Jewish character. I want everyone to have that potential for redemption.
I would add to your villain worship the entire Star Wars universe, because people tend to dress up as Darth Vader. And
interesting.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about Ahsoka soon.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, is she on your list? did I miss something?
I do want to point out that start with RDY saying, oh, there's not much to talk about. It's Magneto. We all get it.
Okay, I'm going to add one more thing to the Magneto thing, and then we'll move on to number three. You were talking about
We can't skip Isaac.
Oh, did we? I'm sorry, we didn't even get that. That wasn't even Isaac's character. Man. Oh my god!
So much for the host of the year award.
All right, I'll add one more thing about Magneto, and then Isaac will hear more about yours. Is you had mentioned about Jewish characters responding poorly? I guess right, the negative response, and I actually have. There's an example. Real life example, the Bielski brothers, who the movie The Inglourious Basterds were based off of, a real group of Jewish people who hunted down Nazis. Not the right response we want Jews to have. Idolized in a, oh, good response.
Oh, I disagree. Like, yeah, hunt down Nazis.
Oh, okay. The whole like murder scalping situation, I think.
I mean, they went overboard.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm talking about.
And I don't mean to minimize, you know, violence. Tarantino. But Nazis are bad.
Yes, I agree with you there. That's yes. Okay. Yes.
I guess that's an easy way to get everyone to agree with me. Like, understand Nazis are bad.
Can we just all agree Nazis are bad?
I think that, yeah.
Okay, great. All right. Isaac, tell us about Kate Kane.
So Kate Kane, for those of you who don't know enough about Batman, once upon a time, like 70 years ago, Batman had this teen sidekick named Robin, and there was all this hullabaloo about, oh, is this an improper relationship? Are they gay men, or is it a gay man and a boy? And in order to get away from that, DC introduced the character of Kate Kane, Batwoman, as a potential love interest for Batman. Now, she went through a few iterations over the decades. My interest in Batwoman is her reboot in 2006 by Greg Rucka, where she comes out as a queer superhero and is also Jewish. And I think it's hysterical that the character they introduce in the 50s ostensibly has a beard for Batman so that he wouldn't seem too gay, herself was in fact now a gay character. So I love that aspect of it. But yeah, she was brought in, she was rebooted as a Jewish character. And the thing that's fascinating to me about her Judaism is how well it's done. It's not a gimmick, and it's not just in the December issue. When you see Kate's apartment, you know, she has Shabbat candles. She has a Kabbalah drawing on the wall. When she goes to visit her father in the hospital, they're talking about the rabbi and something that they mentioned. When she's at a cemetery in an issue, there's a Jewish star in the tombstone. Every part of her life is informed by her Judaism. It's a key part of her existence. I love when it's not a gimmick. We said this before. So I know that there are, as I said, she started off one way, she becomes a different thing. I know that there have been multiple versions of her on screen, on TV. But I think what's so fascinating about her in the comics, yeah, is that sense that she is, even when we're not watching her, she's living a full life as a Jewish queer woman. And that, to me, is just wonderful storytelling. That there's stuff happening off the panel, and you can imagine it.
Can I also just quickly add in for Susan that Barbara Gordon is Batgirl, and Isaac is talking about Batwoman. They're two different characters.
Unlike the Invisible Girl and the Invisible Woman, who are the same character, but with a different version of her name. Yes, Batgirl and Batwoman, totally different.
You just lost Susan. Yep. Awesome. All right. Well, that brings us up to our number threes. My number three is Beverly Goldberg from the TV show The Goldbergs.
All of the Goldbergs are in my honorable mentions.
Nice.
Excellent. My number three is Rebecca Bunch from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
My number three is Shalom Man.
Oh, gosh. Wow. You're bringing the heat, David.
Yeah, dude.
Oh, my number three is Rory Regan, better known as Ragman in the DC Comics.
You're bringing the heat too, dude.
Oh my gosh, this is great. Cool. So I didn't write a lot for this one because Beverly Goldberg is my mother. And I could not believe, I was really freaking out when I started watching the show. And they are my family and my household to a T. And it was weird to see that on screen, right? I know there are other people and of other minorities in different cultures and backgrounds who, when they get a show showing their religion or their culture, they go, wow, that's my family. This was a big hit for me when this show started and Beverly Goldberg was my mom. And if you have not seen the show, it is hysterical and it is funny. And if you are Jewish, it is your childhood. It was crazy.
Not only is Beverly Goldberg so many of our moms, but I grew up in the 80s. So all the more so, all the stuff that she was doing, I will say my mother never made shrimp parm. but yeah, Beverly Goldberg, and we watched that, the Goldbergs became our pandemic love show. And we start, like, all five of the Youngs started watching season one, and we would watch it together, and we waited for all five of us to be in the room kind of thing. And yeah. Anytime Beverly Goldberg was in the room, our eldest would be like, that's Nana, with this look of awe.
It was yeah. Great. There is even a point in the show at some point. Beverly is, for those who don't know, super overly involved in the kids' lives, so much so that at one point she teaches at the kids' school. And my mom did the same thing. She retired from teaching in Newark, New Jersey, started substitute teaching in my middle school. And it just, the whole thing from start to finish, it just felt like I was watching my mom on TV, and it was really nice.
Since I think it's great that you said, and it's really nice at the end of that, because you could have gone a different way.
I could have. I guess it's because, like, we talked about this before the episode started. My mom had passed away in 2008. The show came out much after that. So a lot of, like, positive feeling memories. There's that, like, you know, thank goodness she's not calling me 10 times a day still. But it is nice to watch somebody else get those phone calls, you know?
All right. Rebecca Bunch from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is unapologetically Jewish, has a extremely stereotypically Jewish family with her mother. And by the end of the series, her character has learned and grown so much that she is a positive, self-confident person, a human being who has gone through some extremely difficult things in her life and has emerged a better person at the end and chooses her own health and her happiness and is absolutely someone I would love to claim as a member of the tribe.
It's fascinating to me how cliche, how stereotypical, how hokey her Jewishness is, and yet it's not bad. It's not badly done. There are certain characters, certain actors who do that, and you're like, oh, don't give me that same thing again. And she does it, and possibly it's because she created that character and writes it. You just love her. She does it so well, and you don't fault her for her faults. You just you celebrate her similarities with you.
I think it's kind of what you're alluding to. Like, she's very real. I feel like I've known Rebecca a bunch. I have met people who have so many aspects of that personality, both the what we can say the positives, and what we would say were some of the challenges also that Rebecca had to deal with in the seasons of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
I have to admit, I have seen half an episode more of Star Trek than I have of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Well, they're both great.
So I hear good things about Star Trek.
I do too, and I really want to watch more than the second half of that episode.
By the time we finish this podcast, RDY, you'll have basically watched it because I'll have talked about it so much. It's fine.
Be careful, you're going to get Ethan started.
We ready for Shalom Man?
Yeah, who is Shalom Man?
Are we ever going to be ready for Shalom Man?
I don't think you could ever be ready. So we.
You'll believe a man can daven.
Part of me feels like this didn't pass the rule test that we laid out. Does this pass the rules?
Really? I don't think it passes the rules?
I think Shalom Man was created by Jews for Jews, and no non-Jews have ever heard of it.
I'm going to go a step further and say Shalom Man is just being made up by RDY right now, and Isaac is just really good at improv.
So here's what I'm going to say about Shalom Man. We had a dog when I was in high school.
Now it all makes sense.
And this dog had like bow legs, an underbite, cross eyes, bug eyes, and it was so ugly that if you had the uglyometer going all the way over to ugly, that it went so far that it passed back around and into cute again. That is how bad Shalom Man is. It is so bad that the needle goes all the way around and back into, I think I could read this. So there were just a few episodes, I want to say 5 issues of this comic book. And if I'm cheating by bringing this in because it's against the rules, I apologize. But this is my middle of the road pick because he is so bad that it's like car accident on the side of the road, gotta watch it kind of thing.
I don't know him enough to know if it qualifies or doesn't qualify. So I will let you, RDY, decide if you've cheated or not cheated and continue or not continue.
Do I have to sit out the next round?
So it sounds like we're jumping right into me, and I should bring up my number 3. We're all too embarrassed to continue talking
about Shalom Man. Yeah, I don't think we want to talk about Shalom Man anymore.
I love it when people are embarrassed for me.
Oh, it's being embarrassed by being on this show with you mentioning Shalom Man. Yeah.
Isaac's not his real name. He doesn't want other people to know that he is on this show. Torah Smash pseudonym.
Famously created Shalom Man and then wouldn't let his name be associated with the property because he was
created by Alan Moore?
I was biting my tongue when you said that.
Oh, God.
But thank you for believing in me, Barack.
Yeah. I think that'll bring us to our number 3 pick for Isaac.
My number 3, as I said, is Rory Regan, who his dad's name was actually Reganovich or Reganowitz, depending on how you want to pronounce it. But Rory Regan, the superhero known as Ragman, created by Robert Kaniger. And the beauty of this is that Ragman he was coded as a Jewish character, but I think of him as the earliest canonical DC Jewish character because of that. So the story is Rory's dad ran a rag shop. He had been a shmata guy on the Lower East Side in New York. And Rory discovers this suit made of the rags. And when he puts it on, he becomes a superhero. And there's just this wonderful connection to, you know, origin stories, to the generation to generation thing. There's a Kirk Douglas connection. I don't know if you are familiar with Kirk Douglas's book. Is it The Rag Picker? Was that his book about his family? So Kirk Douglas's dad was a shmata guy in New York. And Kaniger talks about that being a partial inspiration for this story that he built around Rory Regan, because that's such a Jewish story as well. The guy buying and selling used shmatas, you know, out of a cart on Rivington Street or whatever. And so that's this Rory Regan story. And his Judaism really only comes out in bits and pieces. But, you know, his advisor, his superhero, you know, guy in the chair is a rabbi. I mean, it's hard to escape all of this. And the references to his name being changed at Ellis Island and all these other elements that we have as part of our American mythos as Jews are built into this character.
I love that we went from essentially Shalom Man to Shmata Man in this round.
he has a really good story arc in Arrow as well.
He does wind up there. That's right.
Oh, and I knew the name was familiar. Oh,
yeah, and they actually had him in the comics fighting alongside Batwoman. There was a whole bunch of them, Batwoman and Ragman and Clayface, and they had a whole thing. And it was nice to have a team with more than one Jew on the team, which you do not see in comics very often. Well, other than one of my honorable mentions. We'll talk about that later.
Awesome. This keeps getting better and better. I don't think there's anywhere to go but up from Shalom Man and Shmata Man. let's move on to number two. Everybody's number two pick. My number two is Kitty Pryde, a.k.a. Shadow Cat from the X-Men.
Yeah, she's my number one.
My number two is also Kitty Pryde.
Oh, and Isaac, if it's your number one, I'm happy to bow and bring in yet another one of mine.
I have plenty from my alternates that I could bring up.
I'm going to stick with Kitty Pryde then.
All right, I'll bring in an alternate for number two.
Great. Yeah, I've already swapped one of mine. So
great. My number two was Magneto, so I'll be pulling in Willow Rosenberg from Buffy.
I am going to have to ask you to step off.
Wow.
My number one.
I think I was just bullied. I wasn't even given the option. I was told, Ethan, step off. Okay, that's fine. I think it means I just have good taste.
I would totally agree.
Yeah.
Okay, I will go with Velma from Scooby-Doo.
Canonically Jewish?
We'll talk about it. She's coded Jewish.
I did not know that.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going with Mr. Krusty Christofferson. Krusty the Clown.
I had him on my list, and my wife was like, you don't want him, Brock. He is not somebody to look up to.
I didn't think it was people we look up to. I thought
no, I know.
I look forward to hearing you quote Jackie Mason in your discussion. That's going to be love it. That's a great one. That's a good pull. My number two is The Thing, Benjamin Grimm from the Fantastic Four. He has to be on the list, and I know it's going to sound cliche. I mean, I could do an hour just on him. I'm glad that I'm the first to mention him. I'm not going to lose him like I lost Kitty.
RDY, did you just lose your number one?
I'm switching out.
All right, so let's get into this contentious round.
That was exciting. I liked that.
That was a good round. I hope number one is just as exciting as number two.
I'm very excited for my number one.
I'm also having fun saying number two over and over again.
All right, so Kitty Pryde, a.k.a. Shadow Cat. We've talked about this a little bit, but her powers essentially seemed a secondary element in the appeal of the character, who's intelligence and Jewish ancestry were pretty highlighted. And yet Kitty's ability to phase was to a degree like an ingenious metaphor for that teenage desire for someone to just disappear. Yeah, and there are some versions of her where she wears the Star of David around her neck. She's often worried about her bat mitzvah. And I did want to mention she has a really moving monologue in the all-new X-Men number 13, where she talks about how her mutation was just like her Judaism. She doesn't have a Jewish sounding name or looks or sounds Jewish, whatever looks or sounds Jewish may mean, but her mutation is also sort of hidden, meaning you can't tell it just by looking at her. And so I thought that was a beautiful representation of a modern Reform Jew, and the fact that they mirrored it in her abilities, I also think was a wonderful decision on the creator's part.
And that monologue, that run was written by Brian Michael Bendis, Jewish comics writer from Cleveland.
It's a great ending. The whole, if you haven't read it, the end of the monologue, she's having this conversation with a team of people. I think it's on a plane. And they get through it. They talk about it and they're discussing her powers. And at the end, one of the characters, all they get out of it, they say, wait, you're Jewish? After her complaining about her like identity of her mutation.
That may come up in Isaac's explanation of,
yeah.
of
it.
No, I mean, she's Barack. I would have, if this we'd been in the same room, this might have come to fisticuffs over her. As I said, she's my number one choice. Yeah. I think you've picked up on all of it. Are you going to mention her tattoo?
Go ahead. I think you probably know better than I.
So recently, she's been on a team called the Marauders. And they've got a whole pirate aesthetic. And she gets this tattoo across her knuckles. And it is famously, it's pirate or sailor language to go with her uniform and everything. It's the words "hold fast" on her knuckles. And I maintain that that is a direct reference to Etzhayim He, to when we say it is a tree of life to those who hold fast to it.
Oh,
that is great.
That's amazing.
You will not find it in the comics, but I insist on it being true.
You must
dance.
Yeah,
I really hope to be accurate. I'm really hoping that, because she's shown up in a couple of the X-Men movies, both as like a background non-mentioned character and as a lead in some of the other later ones. Apocalypse.
Days of Future Past.
And they didn't explore that side of her at all. And I really hope that when the X-Men enter the MCU, they sort of correct that. And they seem to be doing that with some of their characters. So I really hope that they treat that correctly.
Two things about the pirate. See, because I'm not aware of this storyline, but when you were describing it, I'm fascinated for two reasons. Number one, tattoos are very often thought of as Jews can't get tattoos. You can't be buried in a Jewish cemetery if you have a tattoo. That is a flat out bold faced lie. So like, do you think someone with numbers on their arm would be refused burial in a Jewish cemetery? And then the other thing is, do you think we would force someone who converts to remove any tattoos they have? So we'll get into that another time. But the other thing is, there were some very well-known Jewish pirates, one of whom is very famous in the New Orleans area, Jean Lafitte. So he was a French Jewish pirate. So piracy and Judaism and tattoos and Judaism, like, all fun to hear about.
Well, when you live on the fringes of society, as Jews do, then, yeah, piracy, I would imagine, is one of those options that you have to look at seriously. How do you make your way in the world?
Yeah, and then back to Magneto, the anti-hero.
I'll give you that.
Ethan, you're number two.
So this is my third number two, not that we're keeping track of this.
Oh my God, were you eating Taco Bell?
But,
all right, I'll see you guys later. I'm done.
It took me a second. I got it. Thank you.
Sorry.
Start over. RDY is literally red right now from laughing. Oh, man. So Velma from Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated is coded Jewish. So she says Jewish things like Oy Gewalt. She listens to klezmer music. My understanding, because I haven't seen very much of it, is that
nobody listens to klezmer music. I'm just kidding. I said that to
Isaac is slowly raising his hand. My understanding is that her Jewishness is not explicitly touched upon in, I'm so sorry, I have to read this out. Isaac just wrote in the chat, I have a Klingon klezmer song in my iPod. Off air, we're going to have to get a copy of that.
And on air, let me say, this is why you are the first second host.
Yes. My understanding is that her Jewishness is not explicitly talked about, and it's not necessarily a key frontal part of her character. But when I think of who from Mystery Inc. would be a role model, Velma's the first one who comes to mind. The smart one, the one who uses her knowledge to really help solve the mysteries. And to have her be Jewish, just in my mind, makes her even more of a role model, someone even more to want to aspire to be.
That's awesome. Nice. I did not realize that she is canonically Jewish now. That's very cool. For Susan. Who is Krusty Kristofferson?
For Susan. Krusty Kristofferson is Krusty the Clown in The Simpsons. This blue-haired, wild, goofy clown who is totally clown-like on stage, goes backstage and like deflates and like... Oh, yeah, yeah. And he reminds me of Rodney Dangerfield. Allah v'shalom, Rodney Dangerfield. And for Jason, that means we're sorry, he's dead. And the time that I saw Rodney Dangerfield was an accident. I was at Dangerfield's, which is a comedy club in Los Angeles, and he was in the audience. I was not aware he was in the audience, but we're watching the comics, and the host says, Rodney Dangerfield's here. Do you want to do a couple jokes tonight, Mr. Dangerfield? And everyone's cheering. He comes up. So here he is, this old-looking, kind of bent, shuffles up to the stage. Little bit, like once he gets close to the mic, he pulls out a note card from his shirt pocket and he's going, okay, let me do this. And then he like he keys in on one, and then he looks up, his eyes brighten up, he pulls on his shirt, he does the whole collar thing, and he becomes Rodney Dangerfield. And it was an instant transformation. And I feel like that's what Krusty does too. That whole like shifting back and forth to the like, I am so tired of show business, I hate myself kind of the guy, to the clown and brightening up everyone's world. And there's something that's very comedian of that. And there are a lot of comedians who have like a lot of depression issues and self-loathing. And that's also very Jewish to have that kind of self-loathing, that you just turn off the self-loathing and turn way up the comedy, turn way up the joy, and bring other people all of the joy that you want in your life. To me, that's a very Jewish thing. And Krusty's backstory gets highlighted in a spoof of the jazz singer that is an episode called My Son the Clown. I want to say it's like season 3.
It's a great one, yeah.
Somebody will correct you if it's wrong.
So, yeah. And his father is voiced by Jackie Mason. And there's also an RDY Jackie Mason connection. So I'll actually save that story for another time.
All right, cool.
But it almost gives you this feel. So like in the story, Jackie Mason is like against Krusty being a clown. And I believe his first name is like Herschel.
Yeah, so, Herschel Krestovsky.
Herschel Krestovsky. So, you know, here he is being against Herschel being a clown, which parallels Jackie Mason's own story as well, who studied to become a rabbi. I believe he was an ordained rabbi, Rabbi Jack Mazur, and then went into comedy and became Jackie Mason.
I just remember Bart and Lisa are trying to convince Krusty's father to have a rapprochement with his clown son. And they're using all these arguments, including, I feel like I hear Bart in my head saying, but Rabbi, doesn't it say, according to the Talmud, that...
That's Lisa.
Is that Lisa who does that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She approaches him in like 3 different places, like in the study hall and in the store and then in like a bathhouse. But what convinces him is when she quotes Sammy Davis Jr. Oh, and he goes, fun. The Candyman? Oi.
I got to say, almost on my list now, and I wish I'd thought of it. Speaking of Jackie Mason, and I don't know if this is, it's not from a comic. Do you guys remember the old Pink Panther cartoons? Mm-hmm. And then there were these little side cartoons they would do with them, including the ant and the aardvark. Do you remember?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The aardvark had this Jackie Mason delivery. Growing up, I swear, as a kid, I assumed the aardvark was Jewish because talks like this. This is the way he talks about finding the ants. And it's not Jackie Mason. It's John Byner doing a Jackie Mason impression. But that would have been... Yeah, like number one fictional Jewish character would have been the aardvark
from, from the Pink Panther.
Secondary cartoons after you watch the main Pink Panther cartoon.
That's awesome.
So,
that's awesome.
But unfortunately, I didn't think of it.
Isaac, bring us into The Thing.
Yeah, so Benjamin Grimm, The Thing, created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. We've talked about them before. Two nice Jewish boys from New York. Jacob Kurtzberg and Stanley Lieber. So Stan and Jack create this character. He's really a stand-in for Jack Kirby. He's sort of this rough-and-tumble guy from Yancey Street, which is clearly the Lower East Side. And he seems Jewish for so long. He's really coded in this way. And the fans see him as a Jewish character, even though it's never explicit in the comics. Jack eventually finds himself like drawing cartoons of him in Hanukkah cards, you know, to friends, you know, and he's wearing like a kippah and there's candles and he has a siddur. Everybody knows The Thing is Jewish. In 2002, they have a comic in which The Thing actually reveals himself to be Jewish, which you're pointing to on your wall. I've got a cut up version of it here. In 2002, he comes out as Jewish, and the editors are very clear. It's not that they're making him Jewish. It's that he's always been Jewish. They're just talking about it now. And that's the issue right there. We all have a copy. And I love how it doesn't change him at all because he's always been that guy. He's always been someone who, you know, speaks a little Yiddish and, you know, likes his corned beef lean and all of that.
Does he speak Yiddish before that issue?
Yeah, you see him say things like oy vey,
which
we take as because he's a New Yorker, but, you know, it's that whole New Yorker or Jewish
thing.
But I love him so much. I love that You know, he runs into his rabbi in one issue who's like, you know, we haven't really seen you much around the synagogue lately. You never finished and became bar mitzvah. So Ben Grimm has an adult bar mitzvah. When he recently just got married, it was a Jewish wedding under a chuppah with a rabbi. He married, you know, Alicia Masters, his longtime girlfriend. And they recently adopted two kids and they're raising them. I mean, he's a family man who is also this giant monster made of rocks. His Judaism, his quote, when Franklin Richards, Franklin is, suffice it to say, the kid of one of his teammates, Franklin's asking him about being Jewish. And Ben's response is, well, it's not about being Jewish. It's about what you do as Jewish, right? He's very much about, because he's a muscular guy, he punches things. And he's really about action. For him, being Jewish is about the verb, right? It's what do you do? And for him, it's being a hero. And he doesn't make a big deal out of it. He doesn't talk about it that much. But we've always known. And it's why he's, you know, at the number two spot on my list, Ben Grimm.
If you weren't on the show, Ben Grimm would have been my number one. Knowing you were here, I kept him in my replacements list. But if I may, I'd love to read a panel from that comic book you just mentioned. So from 2002, it's issue number 485 of the Fantastic Four, if you're counting. And so there's a kerfuffle, of course. And when a victim is getting up and the thing is helping him up, and this is an old man who's known him all his life, and he says, all these years in the news, they never mention you're Jewish. I thought maybe you were ashamed of it a little. And the response is so quintessentially the thing and so quintessentially Jewish at the same time. He says, nah, it ain't that. Anyone on the internet can find out if they want. It's just, I don't talk it up is all. Figure there's enough trouble in this world without people thinking Jews are all monsters like me.
Oh, there's so much to that. There's so many levels. I shouldn't be tearing up at hearing you read a comic book panel, but I am.
Yeah. It's a great issue.
Yeah.
There's so much of him where he has that self-loathing because of what happened to him with the cosmic rays, because of his appearance. There was so long where he felt he would never find love, that he could never have a family. And when you realize it's because of how much emphasis we Jews put on those things, you know, he's not just some guy. Like, we are raised to think about it. You find someone, you know, you raise, you know, you join a community, you have a family of whatever sort of family it is. That's so much of it. And he feels like, oh, no one could ever love me. You know, and for him to be, you know, to have that ambivalence about his Judaism, I mean, yeah, there's so much great stuff. And I got to tell you, I'm that guy who freeze frames the Fantastic Four movie to see the mezuzah on the door and the menorah in the background of his childhood home, because the filmmakers were like, you know what, we're going to acknowledge, you know, he's Jewish. He comes from a Jewish home. They didn't do anything else with it in the movie. I think this was the most recent, the one where they're all kids. Michael Jordan plays. But I love that respect that is paid to characters, you know, the same way that they did it with Moon Knight in the TV series, where there's an acknowledgement of the history of these characters. You would want that for anyone, whatever background they come from. You want their stories to be on the page or on the screen.
Wonderful. Okay. I could do this all day.
I'm sure we'll eventually have an episode on The Thing. Being all the stuff. So I can only imagine that is around the corner as well.
For sure.
All right. Let us get into our number one picks and fight it out for this remainder of what's left.
Here we go.
All right. So my number one pick is Willow Rosenberg from Buffy.
My number one pick is Tommy Pickles from the Rugrats.
That's awesome.
Not surprised. My number one pick is Chunk from the Goonies.
My number one pick was Kitty Pryde. I got to mention that. But my number one pick beyond that, I think just because of the oddness of it, and this was one of my honorable mentions, so it wasn't like I bumped up number two. I'm going with the Chayot, who are an Israeli superhero team that show up in the pages of the Suicide Squad.
Ooh.
Wow. Oh,
I'm looking forward to that. So that's great.
So awesome. It's a team, but it's the Chayot.
Very nice. All right, so Willa Rosenberg, played by Allison Hannigan, who is Jewish, her mother's Jewish. It's part of her identity. We mentioned this for some of the earlier picks. And sort of just like how the show made Buffy feel like a lead character instead of a female lead character, Willow felt like a friend instead of a Jewish friend. It was present, but it wasn't her character's gimmick. She was very culturally Jewish in a town with little to no other Jews, as far as we can tell. Earlier in the series, Willow is asked, they're walking in the hallway, you know, what she's doing for Christmas. And she replied, being Jewish, and said that not everybody worships Santa. She mentions her bat mitzvah. We see her put rocks on a gravestone, menorah in the background of her spaces in the holiday episodes. And even at one point later in the series, when she really comes into her spells and casting, she calls upon a demon from Kabbalistic hierarchy, Asmodeus. So also fun fact, just on the side for Buffy, the actors who portrayed Buffy and Buffy's sister were both Jewish, Sarah Michelle Gellar and Michelle Trachtenberg, even though their characters were not. And even though Willow's werewolf boyfriend, Oz, was never said to be Jewish, he's also played by Jewish actor Seth Green. So I just wanted to throw those out there very quickly while we're on the Buffy thing, but always loved how she really felt like one of the first really mainstream Jewish characters that wasn't really hiding it, and it wasn't a gimmick. It was just part of who she was.
Buffy and Angel both happened during a period of my life that I'm not proud of at all, where I was not watching television.
Were you in prison?
I was being a theater snob. Like, I only go to see live entertainment.
I only watch The Muppets.
It was really awful. And then a little bit after that, I was too poor for a television, so I didn't have one. So it was, yeah. That I missed out on Friends. I missed out on Seinfeld, Buffy and Angel. Like, but in order to, for the werewolf to be Jewish, do they need a silver scalpel?
There's a whole thing, right, about how so many of, like, whether it's vampires and the cross or holy water or, you know, on how you have to be a believing Christian to accept the mainstream interpretations of a lot of these characters.
Yeah.
There's a lot there. That's a whole other thing, right?
That would be a fun satire to, you know, the Jewish vampire story.
I mean, the Jewish vampire story
does nothing to me.
You know, the vampires are the Jews. I mean, that's the vampire story.
Oh, ouch. Never mind myself.
Oh, yeah. That's why they're damaged by the cross.
Mm. Ethan, yeah. Willow was on your list also, correct?
Yes. I'd also mention, actually, she was also one of the first, like, real out lesbian characters on TV. There's a bit of pride of seeing a Jewish person, you know, the intersectionality of that.
Yeah. All right. Bring us back to Nickelodeon.
Tommy Pickles from the Rugrats. You cannot convince me that for my generation growing up, there was not a Jewish character who had a deeper impact than Tommy Pickles and his family from Rugrats. Not only did we get a positive Jewish portrayal of his family, of his grandparents, we not only got the Rugrats Hanukkah special, we got a Passover special. Not just a Passover special, one of the greatest Passover specials of all time. Of all time. There's simply no other Jew that has had that level of impact on the masses than Tommy Pickles of my generation.
Not one religious school that has not seen that Passover special.
Exactly. Exactly.
RDY, you said in a recent episode how there's been no good interpretations of biblical text to film. Would the Rugrats Hanukkah special or Passover special qualify?
Be careful. I will fight you.
I would give it an honorable mention. I'm talking about, like, Dafka movies. So, and I know that that's an episode, so I'm distinguishing it that way.
Okay, fine.
I hope my passion came through on this. I firmly believe everything I just said.
If I had said something bad, would you kick my butt with your non-existent legs?
I was going to save it for the live show.
Can I add a nerd level to Tommy Pickles? For those that don't know, Tommy Pickles is a Whovian.
He's a Time Lord.
Yeah,
the character or the voice actor?
The character, the people who created Tommy Pickles were big Doctor Who fans. And so there's a number of things within Tommy Pickles' character that they created him as a Time Lord. And so he always carries around the screwdriver with him. It's always in his pocket. Oh god, that's the only one I can remember off the top of my head. Do you remember? Does Ethan? Do you remember any of the other? There's like three or four.
I think
four
his
things.
Diaper is bigger on the inside than on the.
There's like a few things that creators put yeah. into his character, like the screwdriver, as an example.
Yeah, I also don't have the full list, but I remember screwdriver.
We'll come back to it.
Yeah,
guess we'll come back to this in a future episode, definitely. RDY,
yeah.
Lawrence Cohen,
yeah, Sloth Love Chunk. So Chunk is one of my favorite characters, not only Jewish characters, but characters in all of filmdom. The Goonies is one of those movies that we watched over and over and over as a kid. My sister and I can recite the movie backwards and forwards, and we'll say a line from the movie and just start laughing because we know all that happens behind it, kind of thing. So as we mentioned in our first episode, go back and listen if you haven't in a while, that when they first go up to the attic, Chunk goes, "We only have old Hanukkah decorations in my attic." And then when he meets the car on the side of the road, after another one of my favorite lines in all of Goonies, "I'm not afraid of the dark. I love the dark." And then he gets hit by a tree in the face and he goes, "But I hate nature." And so he stops a car and he goes, "Excuse me, mister, we just ran into these disgusting people, the Fratellis, and I could describe all of them." And then the light goes on in the car and it's the Fratellis. And he goes, "Baruch Adonai." So, and there are other references, like he describes a bullet hole as the size of matzo balls, you know, like
he once glued his Uncle Max's toupee on his face to play Moses in the Hebrew school play.
Yeah, they're like all over the place. But here's the thing. Now, I don't know if this is Jewish, but to me it is. At the end of the movie, when the kids are reunited with their parents, spoiler alert, the parents all hug their kids. They'll kiss him on the head. They'll kiss him on the cheek. Chunk is the only kid who kisses his mother on the lips. To me, that's very Jewish. Like, I kiss my parents on the lips. I had a discussion today with my daughter. She doesn't ever want me to kiss her on the lips. And it's something that I never stopped doing from child to grown up. And that kind of closeness to me never seemed weird. And maybe until today when my daughter called it weird. And so I found that to be a very Jewish moment for him as a character.
I never did that growing up. I did not kiss my parents on the lips.
If I take away nothing from this podcast other than, I guess I need to finally see The Goonies, that'll be a win.
Oh, right? Short
answer, yes. I'll speak for RDY, who is mouth agape speechless right now.
I know the Cyndi Lauper song.
Okay, so I know what you're doing the evening of December 9th. You're coming to my house and watching The Goonies. If the Summers are listening, I'm taking Isaac that evening.
Can we mention that the actor who portrayed him, Jeff Cohen, also Jewish? And then after the movie, eventually went on to law school and became a successful entertainment lawyer in Los Angeles.
Pretty
Jewish.
Yes, and he is also from the holy city of Cincinnati.
Ah, my home away from home, Porkopolis.
Uh-huh.
All right, Isaac, take us away with our final number one pick.
The Chayot. So for our non-Hebrew speaking listeners, there must be a few. Chayot is Hebrew. Yeah. Jason. Chayot is the Hebrew word for beasts. And the Chayot are an Israeli superhero team. They're super powered, for sure. They show up in the 90s in the Suicide Squad when they have a mission in the Middle East and they spend some time in Israel. And here's the thing. I know it's sort of cheating to have to have a team of five people as my number one pick instead of just one. I sort of get the best of all worlds. But the team is composed of... Well, so there's the leader is the Cohen, of course, right? Colonel HaCohen. But the team is Judith, who we may remember from the Bible as, you know, a warrior woman who has these little...
She's not in the Bible.
Sorry, you're right. We tie her to a whole other episode. So the Judith in Chayot has these little shuriken, right? The little throwing stars, but they're little six-pointed stars. There is Rambam, who is the team leader.
His name
is Rambam. He is a magician and physician, and on his chest, where the superheroes have their symbols, it's just a big Aleph. There's the golem, whose real name is Moshe Nachman. And he is sort of like a clay face, like a malleable sort of a character, obviously. And they do have an artificial intelligence member who is known as Dybbuk, which is perfect, because the idea is that perhaps there is this human spirit inhabiting this computer, and therefore is intelligent and is a human. I might have named the AI the golem for other reasons, but suffice it to say, there's a golem, there's an AI, there's Rambam, there's Judith. It's just a great team, and they are constantly shouting out things like, by the names of the patriarchs, or possibly my favorite speech bubble in comics of all time, maybe, is Rambam yells out Tetragrammaton, which is the four letter name of God, which you're not supposed to say. If you're a Monty Python fan, you get stoned for it, right? That is the Tetragrammaton, the four letter name of God. So rather than yelling out this powerful thing, knowing God's name, right, is supposed to be a very powerful thing. He doesn't yell out God's name. He literally yells out Tetragrammaton. And I think that's just classic. So if you are not familiar with him, I do have the run here. I've cut them up a bit for my work, but it is a fascinating look into what, some guys writing comics thought an Israeli superhero team would be. And they skirt that line, as we've talked about, between defense and offense, between are they doing something good or are they doing something bad? Are they good guys or are they villains? They're good guys. But the Chayot.
I really wanted Rambam to be their explosive expert.
Oh, boy.
would have been wonderful.
One of my honorable mentions is Sabra.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Similar vein. She appears in the Hulk comics and was a Mossad agent and took like the Israeli version of Super Soldier Serum. So
she'll be in the new Captain America movie, is my understanding.
I was going to say, I just heard that she was going to be in something.
Oh, wow.
Which is either incredibly great or a horrible tragedy, depending on how they play her. Very nervous.
I'll if she honest. Goes well, maybe we'll get the Chayot in the next DC movie.
In the next Suicide Squad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Since DC copies everything that Marvel does.
Without going too much into detail, I'd love to get everybody's alternates. I'll go first. I'll just do a quick rundown. I'm not going to give any explanation of why. I'm just going to give name and property. Grover from Sesame Street. thank you. Winston Schmidt from New Girl. David Rose from Schitt's Creek. Walter Sobchak from The Big Lebowski. Mordecai Jefferson Carver from The Hebrew Hammer. Arthur from The Tick, which very surprised it wasn't on RDY's list.
Yeah.
And then last alternate was Linda Richman from SNL.
Oh, from Coffee Talk.
Yeah, 555-4444. Give us a call. No big whoop.
I should have put Vanessa Bayer's Bar Mitzvah Boy as one of my alternates. So I had 9 in total. So I only had one that didn't get spoken of. And that was the Jews in Space from History of the World Part 1.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very funny.
My ones that didn't get mentioned are Larry Gopnik from A Serious Man and Ross and Monica Geller and Joseph and Sam, who are the two main characters in The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, which was the novel that told me I could write my thesis. and then two that may be cheating. Well, one that may be cheating, one that's cheating. Shylock.
I don't think that's cheating.
Okay, that was the one that may be cheating because he was written to be Jewish, but it's not a Jewish play for Jews. So,
yeah.
And Yoda.
Oh,
which I know.
That is a conversation.
I will.
Ethan,
I know that Yoda is not canonically Jewish, but he's Jewish.
He's also non-canonically Jewish. But we'll talk about that later.
My alternates included Doc Samson from Marvel Comics, whose first name, I guess, is Leonard. Green hair. He is also a gamma irradiated person, but the only thing it did is turn his hair green. He's a psychiatrist and a Jewish person and a superhero. He's the Hulk's psychiatrist.
Yeah.
That's a horrible way to present him. He's not just the Hulk's psychiatrist.
We didn't mention any Big Bang Theory characters. When you said Leonard, it made me think of that.
Are any of them Jewish?
Leonard.
Howard. Sure. Oh, Howard Wolowitz. I'm surprised he wasn't on my list.
Isn't Leonard?
I don't think so.
Mary Marvel, who is from the Bombshells DC series. Mary is like the little Billy Batson. She shouts out Shazam, but it stands for Shifra, Huldah, like all of these biblical Jewish characters.
That's awesome.
And this is set in Germany in World War II, and she becomes Mary Marvel. Wonderful character. Colossal Boy from the Legion of Superheroes, whose actual name is Gim Alon. And he wasn't written as Jewish, but in the 80s, a new writer took over for the Legion and said, oh, that looks like an Israeli name. I'll bet he's Jewish. And made him into a canonically Jewish character who celebrates Hanukkah in space. His mom becomes the president of Earth, which is lovely for a Jewish mother. And then my one non-comic choice is Reb Avram from the Frisco Kid.
Oh, man. Oh, my gosh. So good.
So for my third podcast appearance, we're only going to talk about Frisco Kid, right?
Oh, that's so good. I'm surprised I didn't have Rabbi Tuckman on my list for Men in Tights.
Oh, this was so much fun. Thanks for this.
Thank
you, Isaac, for coming back. Wow.
Yeah. I loved this exploration of Jewish characters in popular culture. And I wonder how many of these were a surprise for you, our listeners. But regardless of who your number one Jewish character in pop culture would be, I think it's really nice that we do have so many options for the Jewish people to imagine themselves as. Whether you imagine yourself a hero, a friend, a sidekick, or the life of the party, there's a Jewish character out there for you. The only question now is, who would play us in Torah Smash, the movie for nerdy Jews?
Oh, that's a whole nother episode.
Yeah. Dibs on Paul Rudd. Isaac, wonderful to have you back. Do you have any shout outs or plugs you'd like to make as we wrap up this episode?
Well, you did mention in my bio the whole Paper Midrash thing that I do. My wife and I travel around the country. If you are a listener to Torah Smash and we are in your city at your congregation doing paper cutting or giving a pop culture sermon, please come up and let me know that you listen to Torah Smash. I'd love to find that larger community.
Yes, please do.
And if you have never had Paper Midrash in your community, you should tell your community leaders that you want to bring in the Brinjigar Bialiks because it's a fantastic program.
Yeah, we have a great time. I mean, it's basically an excuse for me to geek out and talk about comics and stuff with people. And for Shauna, it's an excuse to geek out and talk about Torah. So
if we want a tour, I volunteer us to be your opener.
Ooh. Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
We call it Paper Smash.
Something rock, paper, scissors. Yeah.
Yeah.
Barack, paper, scissors.
That's fun. I'm so down.
Oh, my goodness. And then you can get like a circumcision at the end of it, like a trifecta.
Got it.
Is that going to be cut? I guess I'll find out when we're online.
Wait, is that another circumcision joke?
Is that going to be cut?
You guys.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Torah Smash. Our fiscal sponsor is Jewish Creativity International. Our theme music was created by Sean Fogel. You can check out Sean's bands and studio work at www.thesleepywest.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to rate and review us wherever you listen. It helps others find us and is an excellent way to support the podcast. We want to hear from you and continue today's nerdy discussion. Go to torahsmash.com to find where to connect with us online, purchase swag from our store, support us with a donation, find previous episodes, and more. And we'll end with the call that Marvel should have given to their group of heroes and say, Jewish people, assemble!
Hey, I gotta eat all these ants.
Sorry.
Umami pickles.
Umami pickles.
Umami pickles.
Tetragrammaton.